Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. On today's program, I'll be presenting another in my Health Challenges series. My guest is Brenda Kuhn. Kuhn is a longtime activist with a focus on women's issues and disability rights. She has worked as a weaver and woodworker at the Finger Lakes Independence Center and at TCAT. She is also the mother of two grown sons. In March of 1980, at the age of 28, she was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. We'll talk to Kuhn about her long journey dealing with this multi-symptom and unpredictable disorder. And welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, your MS was diagnosed in 1980, but you said you had inklings before that something was wrong. You know, bizarre things like tingling and failing muscles. Tell us about that.
Yes, it was quite the mystery. I was back in Ithaca after being down in Virginia for 3 years. Mm. I knew some folks in Ithaca. I had some friends, but pretty much I was on my own. I had left the man I had been in a relationship with for about 7 years, had a child, left at about, he was about a year and a half. So I was feeling very much alone and started having these strange tingling sensations in my hands, my fourth and fifth fingers on both my hands, my nose, my lips.
Wow.
And they would come and go. They would just be there and not be there. And I thought, well, anxiety. I'm in a tough situation. I'm just, you know. And then my legs started to fail on me. I was living in a room in a house on Tioga Street, lots of stairs to get up to the room. Some days I could bound up those stairs. Some days couldn't make the first step. No idea what was happening. Had no primary doctor. Went from doctor to doctor in town. Nobody could tell me what was going on.
And you say that you were misdiagnosed. What were they saying they thought it was at first?
A lot of them would say it's a nerve problem. It's anxiety. Mm. And it was. MS is definitely a neurological problem. The answer, because in Western medicine, there has to be a we-fix-it answer, was Valium, was antidepressant medication,
oh my gosh,
anti-anxiety medication. And it was the 70s, and I knew about drugs, and I knew that that wasn't going to help, that that wasn't the situation. So I kept looking. Finally, ended up with a brand new family practitioner out in Trumansburg who stuck with me, who really stuck with me. And her first guess was vertigo.
Oh.
And so she was treating me for vertigo. Didn't happen. The MS progressed. Things got more and more severe. Symptoms came on more and more regularly. And finally, I went into the hospital a few days after my 28th birthday, March of 1980, with a bladder in total retention.
Oh, my gosh.
So that I couldn't pee. And so went from the emergency room. I was admitted. And within about, 3-4 days, I was paralyzed from about diaphragm level, waist down. This good doctor heard about a neurologist that was coming through the Gannett system, was up at Cornell, called him in. He did a very quick neurological exam, said to her, yep, I think it's MS. She was kind of leaning that way. There was no neurologist at the time in 1980 in Ithaca.
God, I was shocked when I saw that on your notes. Oh, my God.
There are now, and they're very fine neurologists, but not back then. So having done an internship in Rochester or a residency, whatever, she put me in an ambulance and took me up to the hospital where she had served in Rochester, where I was diagnosed, was given mega, mega doses of ACTH, of steroids, kicked me into MS remission. Within about another 4 or 5 days, things started coming back.
Wow.
Starting with my feet and then moving on up.
Tell us, though, did you have any family history of this? Are you the first in your family? Often it does run in families.
Good question.
Know this. Yeah.
Good question.
So was it totally shock out of the blue, in other words?
Shock out of the blue.
No one in the family had ever been diagnosed. Oh, my God.
It's interesting in MS, and they're finding out daily more and more. Back when I was trying to learn more about it, it tends to come more within families back then with siblings.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't a hereditary condition. Although, since then, I know of situations where a father has it, a daughter has it. They think, at least from what I know, it has something to do with the environment.
Well, you know, a lot of these autoimmune diseases seem to. I've talked to many people about this. It's mysterious, and yet, you know, it could be coming from the environment.
Starting to pinpoint it. You don't find it below the equator much at all. It's more in northern climes. And if you're just, it's viral. They're believing that it is viral. It is autoimmune. They, as yet, have not found causality. And if you don't know the cause, it's hard to find a cure.
Yeah.
So we don't have a cure at this point. There is no vaccine.
No, but
so
they're working on more drugs, though. I keep hearing about them coming out. Brenda, tell me, when you were diagnosed, this is a long time ago, obviously, 1980, what was the prognosis? Did they give you information? I mean, oftentimes medical people don't give people much information, just say, we'll take care of it, take your medicine. And how much did you know about the progression of this and how it would be, you know, coming and going into remission? Is that something you had to learn on your own? What were you told?
Nothing and everything. Because it was in a research phase, people, the scientists, were still trying to find the answers. I was a guinea pig in a lot of ways. And they knew what would help with symptoms.
Mm.
They knew that ACTH, that steroids, which is the Western medicine's miracle drug for anything because it kickstarts the body into healing.
And it helps athletes go back to their tournaments.
Anything.
Right? Yeah,
it's
exactly.
An immediate adrenaline kick. And it works. It works. It has side effects, and I've paid for that. But it does work. So they can give you kind of an immediate boost. But as far as MS itself, all they could tell me were testimonials, past stories. We think maybe this was MS in this situation, and this was the course. But every MS situation is different.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
There are people with MS who are diagnosed and they get nothing more than maybe a little buzz in their fingers.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, it will affect vision because it affects the optic nerve. So there'll be some double vision. That's all that will ever happen. So it varies so much.
Oh, yeah, it does.
It's hard
to pinpoint.
Autoimmune,
you know, it's unpredictable.
Exactly.
You know what I wanted to ask you, too? So suddenly you're paralyzed in the hospital and being diagnosed with MS. How did you deal with your home environment? I mean, you obviously had to, you were on your own with a one-year-old kid. How did you deal with being able to navigate your new world?
Ithaca is amazing.
Yes.
And the longer I live here, and I'm sure it's not only Ithaca, I had, as I said before, some friends here. And they rallied. They really, really rallied. It was also the 70s, coming out of the 70s.
Right, right.
Coming into 1980. I was, at the time, I had a part-time job at Moosewood Restaurant. So, and I had just started. This was brand new. I was working for a friend in a woodworking shop, knock on wood. I was a craftsperson. As you mentioned, coming into this, that was my background. That was my income. So those people were immediately there for me and would come to visit me all the way in Rochester, would send me a radio, would just say, you are not alone. You are not here.
So did they help you modify your house and make changes?
No, not originally. Certainly not originally.
Because I do want to bring this up. This all happened before, you know, the Americans with Disabilities Act was enacted.
Far before.
People with disabilities were in very, very unfair territory.
Exactly.
Right? And so tell us, I mean, were you in a wheelchair and on crutches immediately?
Yes.
And that was a progression. You didn't go into remission enough not to need disability help.
I went in and out. For a while, mm-hmm. I could walk with a cane mm-hmm. and use the wheelchair. Sometimes MS goes up and down and up and down. It's a real roller coaster.
Yeah.
But for years, I would walk with a cane. It was eye-opening. It was truly eye-opening.
Oh, I can imagine.
All my life, I have been aware of and focused on people who are less fortunate than myself. I grew up in the church. My dad was a Lutheran minister coming out of the South, so it was from a very Christian perspective that we help those who need help. And so I thought I had a handle on who it was who needed some extra, you know, assistance from those of us who could do, and suddenly I was one of those who needed assistance, and I was one of them. And that was, that acceptance piece was very difficult.
You know, it must have been so hard. I mean, it still is for people with disabilities, the way the world starts treating you, too.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was a kid, people would start screaming at people in wheelchairs thinking that they were either deaf, you know, that kind of thing. We all know that now. But it's must have been such a strange bash to your ego to suddenly live in a world of such insensitivity.
With disabilities make people who are able-bodied uncomfortable. And so you who are able-bodied choose not to see us. And I think I told you in my notes, I have a son who is disabled.
Yes.
And he expresses this so much more clearly than I do. Both of us have very visible disabilities right now. And we feel ignored.
Yeah.
We feel less than human, that we can be forgotten, that we don't count. And we have to work to make ourselves noticed and make ourselves heard.
So you still feel that way in this world, even though, you know, obviously things have changed since the Americans with Disabilities Act and people more aware of disabilities. But you don't think it's changed that much in regard to people's attitudes?
No, it has changed. Mm. Oh, it has changed. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that has to do with the disabled folks themselves, for the most part.
Yeah.
And I am generalizing. But I think not just people with disabilities, but people who are marginalized in given situations are finding enough support to say, we're here, you have to hear us.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Brenda Kuhn. We are talking to her about her disability. It's MS, and this is a Health Challenges program that we are focusing on today. You know what I wanted to bring up, too? You also had another son after you'd been diagnosed with MS. Tell us about giving birth to a child, parenting, knowing that you have this pretty catastrophic, unpredictable illness. What was it like? Did you have second thoughts?
Certainly no regrets about having the child.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly regrets about leaving the child. I didn't intend to leave the child. I couldn't live with the child's father. But he was and is a very fine dad. And so he stepped right up. And he, because our relationship was newly broken, was also very frightened. And he saw himself as a single parent. And I think the message that my older son got was that I was going to die, that this was serious enough and people were worried enough and were shocked enough that he, being four years old, didn't understand what was going on. He didn't know what questions to ask. And so when he first came to see me, because his father brought him, in the hospital, his first question was, Mama, are you going to die? And I reassured him and explained to him that, no, this was not terminal. This was not. And I realized that it wasn't just my 3-year-old child. It was a lot of people who had no idea what MS was about, including myself, back to your other question. One doesn't know with MS.
Yeah. It is totally unpredictable. Yeah.
You just never know when it's going to hit and at what level it's going to hit. And the fact that I entered it in paralysis, I kept expecting to go back there. I haven't, but it's the question is always there, always what's going to be happening to a certain point.
Yeah.
I've come to the point that I've had it for so many years that I no longer have the exacerbations, the attack. So for the last 10 years or so, I'm in what is labeled secondary progressive, which means that symptoms that I've already been living with, that I've already gathered, progressively get worse at a slow pace.
Yeah.
I will have events where they will act up more, but nothing new. I'm not losing any more new nerve function.
How do you deal with your health now? Do you have to be checked every 2 months, every six months? How often?
6 months.
And what kind of checkups do they have to do? Do they have to do extensive, or is it just, you know?
No. Well, it depends on what stage I am, on what's happening. I'm avoiding details here because you don't need the details.
Yeah, yeah.
For the most part, I've learned to live with this body. I have an incredible support system with my now husband, my old partner. Everyone has come on board with this. And so we have made the home that I live in accessible to me with a lift, an accessible bathroom. I'm very comfortable.
Traveling's you have a certain amount of independence
tricky.
Because of that, right? I mean,
exactly.
Obviously, yeah.
I've just recently, within this past year, given up driving. I can still drive. I have hand controls. I have my license. I can't make it back to the back of my van to get my scooter out of the car, which is, so I have to have help in doing that. And up until this year, and we've worked it out, my husband and I. In fact, he drove me here. He's off doing something else. He'll pick me up. I mean, you
way for whatever's
exactly.
coming, right?
You alter the life.
Has this changed? I mean, obviously, it's changed your personality. You probably have more patience, or perhaps not. Tell us how it's changed you in regard to even having to deal with your own self now in a different manner.
It's been an ongoing process, and I think when I wrote to you in preparation for this, I said the gifts that MS has brought me are numerous. I have learned things. I have experienced things, certainly, that I never would have had I not been offered this entry point in terms of compassion with other people's situations, in terms of patience.
Yeah, I'll bet.
And the gift of moving slowly, of having to be more aware of my surroundings, which are not only the physical surroundings, so I have to look down, so if I'm using crutches or canes, I don't fall on my face, but also the people around me. And whom to go to when I need assistance. And finding that asking for assistance can be a gift in itself.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And that people appreciate that. And it's an interesting aside. For years, when I'm out around town and I am... This was like back when I would be putting a scooter in the car, for an example, and I would lose my footing and I would end up on my butt and I would be sitting and I couldn't get myself up and my husband or somebody was far away and I needed help. And it's the old, I've fallen and I can't get up, you know? Who do I look for? Who is most likely to be trustworthy, to be helpful, to be gracious? What I found are young Black men. Again and again and again, I will look around to see what young black man seems to be not rushing off to somewhere or just to be available. I would 9 times out of 10, they will be there, they will be courteous, they will go above and beyond.
That's
you know, just an
amazing wonderful, yeah.
Discovery. It's the gift. It's things that I would not have noticed, I don't think, not given the situation I find myself in.
Yeah.
And it's not just the MS. You can do it if you look for it, but it's just these gifts that come.
Yeah, I mean, that's a gift to be able to see it that way. You know, I mean, oftentimes when people have debilitating illness, they end up depressed, and I'm sure you've probably gone through some of that. But more so, I have found people that I've interviewed for this show who have disabilities or illnesses, they have found the gift of life from it in many ways,
a
new life. I want to ask you this, too, because MS is, you know, it goes into remission, it comes and goes, symptoms are here and there. Does it psychologically help you to know that, oh, God, you know, I can't move my arm, but it'll probably change in a few days? Or does it fill you more with anxiety knowing that these things are going to keep coming and going? And how does that affect you?
Experience what happened last time. That's everybody's,
yeah.
You know, oh my gosh, I had a car crash, blah, blah, blah. Oh, but the one before I came out of it and I only had to pay, you know. I mean, it's the experience. Everything is new, but we all of our experiences are new, you know. You can't count on anything. It's just another layer.
Yeah.
Of
Do people with MS have support groups in this town? Do you have to start your own, or have you started one, or are there agencies
that
assist?
They move in and out.
Uh-huh.
They come and go.
It's like a book club, right?
There you go.
Yeah.
I think there is one going on now at the Finger Lakes Independence Center, where I worked for a while. I'm not sure if it's sponsored by the National MS Society. Sometimes it is. That comes and goes. I knew there was one for a while for caretakers of people with MS, because that's a whole nother group of folks who need support. But yes, so if there are questions about it, certainly call the Independence Center and can get some good information.
Now that you've lived for all these years as a semi-disabled person, I don't consider you disabled, really. I mean, but obviously disabled in the world, yes.
I am, and it's me.
What does the culture and society need to still do for people with disabilities? What would you like to see change? I know wheelchair access is there, but, you know, I mean, how do you change attitudes?
Notice us. Look us in the eye. I use a wheelchair now pretty much 24/7. So I find if I am on the street, if I am at a party, if I am at a doctor's office, if I'm in a store, I'm always looking up. I'm always, always having to look up.
Mm-hmm.
And that psychologically can do something to you. It is wonderful. Particularly with a man, being a woman, if the person will just squat down so there's eye contact, so we're talking one-to-one. And being feisty, and I've always been feisty, sometimes if it gets uncomfortable, I'll say, could you find a chair, please? This conversation is going on for a while. Could you, you know, a lot of folks won't do that.
Yeah.
Because the culture says what we've heard, it's them and us. And being them, we are lesser than. And so we take what we have to take.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm sure you get lots of patronizing. I mean, that's a part of it that I'm sure would absolutely make me furious, you know?
But people are learning.
Adults with great brains. And so what if you're in a wheelchair, you know? I mean,
People are learning, and people are. I've never had people refuse to do it, you know. And a lot of it too is how it's presented. I mean, I'm feisty, but I'm not mean. You know, it's kind of a please, you know.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned that you like to write letters and write to people, and you write poetry now. Have you thought about writing a blog about your experience? Because this goes back to my question about how are we going to change attitudes?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people with disabilities and people who've gone through grieving and, you know, whatever life hands out, start blogs to have conversations about it. Have you thought about that?
Yes, and thrown it out. No, I'm one of those old school, you know, I put a stamp on it. Other people write blogs, beautiful blogs, and I read them. You know, I'm not that far removed. And if technology is the tool that people choose, I can use it. But it's not the best way that I can share my insights.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we all have to find our best skills, our best tools, our best ways of sharing, not just for ourselves, but for our audience.
Mm-hmm.
Music. Another aside, I love to dance.
You said that in your notes, yeah.
I refuse to stop dancing, and I did for years because my culture said to me, if you're in a wheelchair and you can't, in my doctor's office, my good doctor's office, big, beautiful poster, if you can walk, you can dance.
Oh.
And I went in and I said, I'm not walking, but I'm dancing. Please take down the poster. And they did. They're good folk. But it's that mindset that you have to move through. And so I've discovered that just by that action, I didn't go into the Rongo to hear a great dance band. And unfortunately, there's no more Rongo.
Yeah.
Come back. People would come up to me. People would come up and say, can I dance with you? You know, I mean, these able-bodied, fancy dancers, you know? Because it was novel, it was new, it was opening people's hearts and minds to, wow, and this happens too, and this is really cool. You know, people are eager to see it.
Yeah, I think that's great. Brenda, we're almost out of time. 1 minute of what would you say to somebody who was newly diagnosed with MS?
Oh, my. Have faith. Have faith in your own strength. It will cause you to dig deep, and you can do that. There is power in all of us. Hold close to those people you trust. They will grow. They want to be there for you. You are not a burden. That's hard. That's also a cultural lesson. You are not a burden. You have much to teach them, and they to you. See yourself as an equal.
That's great. I've been talking to Brenda Kuhn. This is a Health Challenges series. We've been talking about her journey with multiple sclerosis. And thank you so much for joining us, Brenda. Good luck. Continue the great
delightful
life.
Delightful, Tish.
Thanks.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.